Welcome to This Is Money podcast in partnership with NS&I. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and alongside editor Simon Lambert and I today is assistant editor slash personal finance editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, we have a housing special. This time, we're not going to try and get bogged down in all the politics. We can leave Boris to do that. No, think of this as your handy how-to audio guide, how to buy a home for the best price. We'll have tips on taking the temperature of the local property market, working out what you can really afford, what to pay, how much to offer, how to do it, and what happens next. Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, where safer savings set you free.
Right, whether you're buying a home for the first time or perhaps you're upgrading to a bigger place, chances are you'll need a bit of cash and you will probably never have been through the stricter lending rules that have come in. So before you buy, you'll need to get match fit. Credit rating up to scratch, a fair whack of money for the deposit. So let's get cracking. Simon, what should you do before you get serious?
Well, before you even do any of the good old-fashioned house hunting bit, the fun bit, the bit where you get to trawl through Rightmove and think, ooh, I could live there, or ooh, I could live there.
And then reality
And then
hits.
Your partner says, yes, but that's about £300,000 more than we actually have, and you have to downgrade your expectations. Or you do the kind of fun thing as well of going and looking around people's houses. You need to work something very important out. How much can you afford? And that involves a number of moving parts. If you're a first-time buyer, it's going to involve the deposit. How much can you save? That might involve years of saving and cutting back. It might also, for a lot of first-time buyers, involve a substantial amount of help, perhaps from family, the bank of mum and dad, the bank of gran and granddad. And you also, in a lot of cases, will probably find that you're going to be buying with a partner. So you need to have a very open and honest discussion with them about finances. And often you'll find that many people might have been living together but at that point. So they should have at least got to the point of the whole joint bank account, knowing what the other's earning and things like that. But they might not do. And this is the time to lay all your cards down on the table. And then also to think about, are you putting in unequal amounts and how exactly are you going to deal with that? Because if you're an unmarried couple and perhaps one of your family has deep enough pockets to give you 10, 15, 20,000 pounds, and then the other family can't afford that or doesn't want to do that, and you've both saved up 5,000 pounds each, then obviously one person's putting in much more. And there are ways of dealing with that when you buy and just making sure that it's shown on a thing called a deed of variation, tenants in common. This person put in this person put in that, and if we go to sell, then this person gets that amount first, that person gets that amount first. It seems like we're jumping way ahead of ourselves here, but this is all involved in the how much can you afford conversation.
Yeah.
So that's for your first time buyer.
Key point as well, that protecting that money,
really,
you put
really
in,
important.
Because that mom or dad is giving money.
Fundamentally important to the how much can you afford thing. If you're moving home, then you're going to have two parts, which are one, how much equity have you got in your existing property, the gap between what the house is worth and how much your mortgage is. Mm-hmm. And then also, do you have any other savings to add to this? Are you tapping up the bank of mum and dad again to move home, which again happens an awful lot, and so on. The other big chunk of what you can afford is going to be your mortgage. Mm-hmm. So what could you afford on your mortgage? So you need to work out roughly the kind of level that you could do. Individual banks and building societies have calculators which will show you roughly how much they'll lend you. You put in your details and they'll give you a decent idea of it. Be aware that those swing around wildly. Some are very, very optimistic. Some are much more cautious. Mm-hmm. Another option is to go to a mortgage broker and go through the process with them. Now, what is being looked at here is what are your earnings and what are your outgoings? Incomings, outgoings. So it's the regular stuff that you spend on. Your commute to work, if you've got childcare, if you've got a loan for your car, if you've got credit card debts, things like that. Basically, that'll work out this number and then a calculation will be done. Some lenders are more generous, some are not so generous, but you'll be able to work out roughly what you should be able to borrow on a mortgage. You can get a thing called an agreement in principle, and that's a great thing to have in your hand. And that says, we agree in principle that we'd probably lend you X amount. Say that's £150,000. And you know, right, I've got this £150,000. I've got £20,000 from elsewhere in a bit money we've saved up. And, you know, our parents said they'd help out a little bit. we can afford £170,000.
Before you've even started looking.
Before you've even started looking, because otherwise you're just literally throwing darts at the internet, which is an interesting sport.
Please don't do that.
Don't do that. You'll break your phone or your computer. Your boss won't like it. What are you doing? I'm just throwing darts at the internet. But no, I mean, seriously, joking aside, you need to know how much you can afford. Otherwise, you are just randomly looking at properties. And I guarantee you that if you start randomly looking at properties, your eye will be turned by the ones that you cannot afford. Yeah. There are not many of us with deep enough pockets that we can just go onto Rightmove or another property listing
there
website.
There are many.
And just pick whatever house we want. You need to know how much you can afford. And then you can get into the interesting bit, which is the endless trawling through Rightmove, checking for new properties, and then starting to go
Sounds
visit houses.
Brilliant, but we're not even there yet, Lee, because while Simon mentioned the deposit, Simon mentioned the mortgage, there's all these other fees and stuff. Now, I know stamp duty has been making the news for the last few years, to be honest. But what are all of the other additional extras that perhaps you don't think about?
Yeah, so there are a number of additional extras. I mean, the stamp duty charges, I mean, there is a first-time buyer holiday at the moment on that. But for others, stamp duty is still applicable, and that will probably be the largest cost outside of the deposit. But there are a number of other fees. So you've got legal fees. So you're going to have a solicitor draw up, you know, all sorts of legal documents, and you have a choice of using your own, so finding your own, or quite often, and what is happening a lot at the moment, is estate agents will push their own legal services onto you, but don't feel obliged to have to use them. You can also, it's quite recommended to have a survey done on the house. So you have a separate service. So you have a survey that the lender will look at, so who you're choosing to have your mortgage with. They'll come, they'll basically turn up and just go, is this house worth this amount of money? And probably just tick a box. They won't do an awful lot. But you can actually pay to have a proper survey done on the property. Now, I would highly recommend that. They actually go around, they'll have a look and check out all sorts of things that might come up that can add significant cost to you once you've moved in. And especially things, you think about some big issues that might be potentially in a home, such as damp. That could be a really big one. Structural problems, you know, and especially for older homes. If you're looking at the older the house, the more I'd really sort of recommend getting a survey. And they can be pretty inexpensive for a peace of mind. And they're the main costs.
You might have some mortgage fees to pay depending on your mortgage.
Yeah.
In most cases, though, you can then add that to the mortgage.
Just a quick one, Lee, as well, about credit rating being so important, because we got new lending rules coming in 2014. And I think the advice that they say is, maybe give it a year if you don't have the best credit rating. But why should it matter?
It matters because you could get turned down for a mortgage if it looks like you wouldn't be able to make those mortgage payments in the future. And let's face it, mortgage payments tend to be the biggest outgoing of someone's finances. So if it looks like you're already struggling a little bit, or you've missed payments on credit cards or your mobile bills or utilities, it doesn't make you look very good. Your past doesn't indicate a good future of being able to keep up with these payments. Now, stricter lending criteria now means that they stress test people's ability to pay back their mortgage to quite a high level. So basically, if interest rates go up by quite a lot, they make sure that that's how much your mortgage payment might go up by. If you're taking that fixed, it will look at what that would be at the end of your fixed rate. Mm-hmm. And that could mean a quite sizable increase. So they want to make sure that you have the means to pay back the mortgage, the home loan. You know, it's a large chunk of money that a lender's giving to you. So they want to make sure that you are paying it back. Now, there's some really simple tips for improving your credit score, especially things like getting on the electoral roll. It's surprising the amount of people that don't do that. If you haven't got a credit card, it could be wise to get a credit card. I wouldn't say that in very, you know,
lightly. It gives
history. Just don't spend very much on it, and just make sure you make the payments on it. You know, don't get yourself into debt for trying to get a mortgage. But it builds up it shows that you can borrow a couple of £1,000 and be sensible with it. Mm. All of that just boosts your credit rating, and a lender is more likely to give you their best deal. And at the moment, mortgage rates are incredibly low, and there are some really good deals to be had, but you don't want to be left behind because of a silly mispayment. So it's really worth, and if you're buying jointly, you know, that's twice the room for mistakes. So you want to make sure that you've got it all in order.
Yeah.
And actually, sometimes that is where a broker really does earn their corn, when they get all of this information together for you to make sure that you're going to be passed for a mortgage at a certain provider. They'll know if there's something in there that doesn't look right. But yeah, credit score is really quite important.
I'd say take a look at it anyway.
Of course,
accidentally dropped off the electoral register and it impacted my credit rating. I didn't realise why.
It easily happens.
Before we get on to Simon's fun stuff, though, and this one's just a very quick one for first-time buyers. There are plenty of saving schemes out there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
The Lifetime ISA, Help to Buy Changing.
To Lifetime ISA, yeah. So basically, the Lifetime ISA, you can put it towards your first home or you can use it as a pension in the future. If you're going to use it for, it has to be your first home. And that means, you know, your joint buyers as well. It has to be your first home.
There are age restrictions as well.
And it's age restriction, 18 to 40. So that's the age that you can take one of these out. Now, it's actually quite a good idea if you're looking to put this towards a first house deposit, because you're going to get a 25% uplift on the money that you put in there up to a certain amount. So it is worth doing that if you have a longer term view. So if you're thinking about buying a house in 3 years' time, 5 years' time, and you can kind of figure out roughly how much you can build up in one of these pots. But obviously that doesn't work for everyone. And actually, the best thing you can ever do for this, if you're starting from ground zero, is just get the ball rolling and start saving and seeing where you can cut back. And I know that's very easily said rather than done, but there has been all sorts of stories in the press in recent times in which people do cut back. It's surprising how much you can cut back on things and how much certain things can cost that we've kind of let spiral out of control. I'm thinking of things like mobile bills and eating out and all that sort of stuff. I'm not saying that not buying avocados is going to get you onto the property ladder, but if you can start saving up, even in year, have some sort of plan. So like year one, I'm going to aim to save £5,000. Now, if that's two of you, that's £10,000. And then in year two, you might be able to up that a little bit. You might be able to put that some of that into a Lifetime ISA, into an investing Lifetime ISA that grows a little bit in value. And then after about 2 years, you're starting to look now, depending on where you're buying, because there's such huge regional variations. Actually, you're starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel. I think a lot of people go, I'm starting from zero, it's impossible. I'm not looking ahead and having some sort of plan. I think it's really, if you really are starting from the ground up, you've got to put together some sort of plan, but don't expect results until sort of 18 to 2 years down the line when you go, yeah, this is actually now becoming something.
All right, Simon. Oh, we've reached the end of the tunnel. The light is shining. Now it's the fun stuff. We go onto the websites, we take a look, we see things that we can never afford and we feel a bit sad, but then we see something we really like. Well, we see a couple of things, but how do you take the temperature of the local property market? You've got an area first, I imagine, where you need to start looking.
Yes, this is the bit where we play the game of throwing darts at the internet.
Yes.
Firstly, yes, you're going to need to work out where you might want to move to and where you might want to live. But that might be a number of different areas. It might be that you've identified two or three different areas, and that can be a good idea. If there's absolutely one place you want to live, then look there or maybe spread the radius out a little bit. But also, if there's just some defining features of the place that you want to live, then consider a couple of places that fit that and work on the basis of the best property that you can find. Before you go round and look at places, you also need to know what kind of property it might be that you could afford and what's important to you. So do you want a flat or a house? Is having a house of absolute importance? Do you want two bedrooms or would you be happy with one bedroom? And look ahead on that one. Be thinking about how long am I going to live there? Most people live in properties for a period that's longer than 5 years. Most people think they might, first-time buyers think they'll live there for about 2 years. They don't. Most of them live there for about 5 years. Are you going to need another bedroom in the next 5 years? Do you want a garden? Is a garden more important to you than a bedroom? So I'll take you back to when me and my wife bought our first flat. Okay, we knew the area that we wanted to live in. What was really important to us was having a garden, a non-negotiable thing. We looked at some places with roof terraces, with big balconies, with things like that. And we thought, no, absolutely having a garden is a big thing for both of us. So then it was, can we afford two bedrooms and a garden? And do we stretch ourselves to do this? And there was a temptation in those days to do so because we were being offered big interest-only mortgages. You could borrow more if you borrowed interest-only. You can't do that now. But we decided actually it was better one bedroom and a garden. And we lived there for 4 years. And we had to move at the end of those 4 years. We had our eldest daughter. She was 9 months old by the time we moved. But it got to the point where we were like, right, we're outgrowing this place. We probably can't last it out. But we probably timed that right. if we'd have been thinking about also having a child straight away, buying a one-bedroom place would have been a mistake. But we were always glad that we got the garden. And we were always glad that we went for the place with the garden over the two bedrooms. But for other people, having two bedrooms might be much more important. And if you're buying by yourself, having two bedrooms can be handy because it means that if your finances get tight, you can rent out one of the bedrooms to a lodger. So once you've decided the kind of place you want and the kind of area, you also need to think about condition. Are you happy to do some work? Do you want a real fixer-upper? Have you basically weighed up exactly how much money that's going to cost? Do you want to buy somewhere that's maybe got a loft that you think you could convert in a couple of years' time that adds that extra bedroom? Or are you the kind of person who just wants to be able to move straight into a flat that looks absolutely mint and you don't ever have to do any work and you don't care about any of that stuff? And it's just different horses for different courses, different types of places for different people. So then it's looking for places, but also, as you said, taking the temperature of the area. Is it hot or cold? Is it a buyer's or a seller's market? Because that's going to influence how much money you might be able to negotiate off the price of those flats or houses. Now, those asking prices, they're just what the person has decided to put their flat or house up for sale for, with some influence from the estate agent or not. Sometimes people just override the estate agent. The estate agent just goes, yeah, all right, we just want the property on. The price that defines what it sells for is what you decide on, not what the seller decides on. This is a great piece of advice from a buying agent called Henry Pryor, who you'll see quoted all over the place, friend of This Is Money. You know, he says, as the buyer, you decide the price, not the seller. And it's up to you to negotiate on it. And the key thing there is, one, how easy it's going to be for that person to sell their home. If they've got people queuing around the block, as people were a couple of years ago in London, then it's a seller's market. And if you really want that property, you're going to have to pay up. You're going to find yourself maybe in that situation of sealed bids going above the asking price. If it's a buyer's market, which it is now in London, then you can go and you can negotiate tens of thousands of pounds off the asking price. But you need to know how motivated, use a word that we used in the most recent podcast, how motivated that seller is. Why are they selling? Have they found a new place they want to move to? Do they just need to get the money that bridges that gap and gets them to move? Is it because they want to make as much profit as possible? Are they a buy-to-let landlord who's owned that property for the past 10 years and has made so much money out of house price inflation that actually they can afford to take a 10-20 grand cut on it because all they're making is profit? They don't live there, they're not selling it because they want to buy somewhere else. Is it a probate sale? Someone's died, it's being sold on behalf of usually the family, normally more than one person involved. They're quite often willing to accept a lower amount in order to just get that property sold and that money into their bank accounts, again because it's money that is effectively coming as a windfall for them rather than money they need to move home. So you need to find out about all of those things, and then when you've got all of that stuff together and you've found that property and you think, right, that's the kind of property we'd like to move to, I reckon I've got a good gauge of like how motivated it is, what the temperature of the property market is, all those other things, why they're moving. That's when you can make your offer.
Okay, you make your offer, Lee. How do you make sure it's accepted?
Well, actually, Georgie, do you want a couple of stories from my house buying experience?
Go for it, Lee.
So basically, a couple of years ago, we bought a property together, and I took a lot of advice from Simon, actually, because I was a little bit scared. It feels like a lot of money. And we had an offer accepted on a flat, a two-bedroom flat, in a very, very good, sought-after location. And then we decided to cast...
Show off.
But then we decided to cast our net a little bit and looked at a town that's not quite as loved as that town, but we could afford a house there instead of a flat. So we had a look. And I looked at what was happening in the town. I saw there was a planning permission to go in for a brand new M&S. And I was thinking, you know, it's all the sort of things you have to look at. You have to be on your game. And I thought, actually, this is going to be on the up a little bit. And subsequently, we did some digging at where we were going to buy the flat and discovered a huge new development was getting built opposite, which was going to take like 3 years. And it was going to be absolutely chaotic.
Disruptive, yeah.
Anyway, we offered on this house. And we were in a fight for the house. Allegedly, the estate agent, as I'll come to tell you in a minute, wasn't always acting in the best interests of, I think, either party. So we were told that we were in a battle with someone that was buying the property in the view to buy to let. And that instantly, I thought, my heart sunk a little bit. So we'd offered a little bit under asking price, which I always think as a rule of thumb is a good thing to do. There's always a little bit of wiggle room. But as Simon rightly says, it depends on the market and how popular a certain area is. So we ended up offering asking price. In the meantime, we decided to go back to the property and just have another look round. The seller was more than happy for us to do it. And we started chatting to the seller. And the seller said, I've been told to accept the other offer because the estate agent is offering their services to the people that are buying a house, whereas we weren't using their services. So we had our own solicitor in place. We had our own mortgage broker. Right. Estate agents get a little bit of commission for having all of these sort of services offered to people. That got the backup of the seller, didn't like being told that's what he should do, didn't like the fact that it was going to be sold to a landlord, and actually preferred that because we were a younger couple and that we were planning to live there to actually live, that he was going to phone the estate agent straight away and accept our offer. And that is exactly what happened. And we bought the place. But
so the tip is to make it personal.
To make it a little bit personal. You know, in most things to do with finance, I would say the complete opposite. But when it comes to something like that, it can sometimes go in your favour. And I was a little bit nervous because it's a house. It's a 3-bedroom house. And I thought, we'd only be there for a couple of years.
We're still there.
And we've got zero plans to move. And we're about to have a child. And if we'd been in that flat, it would have been a little bit. But now we're kind of, we're completely set up for it. And we lived in a flat. We've lived in flats for many years, renting in London. We're now out in Essex. And I think that we kind of did the flat step. And I always think first step for first time buyers tends to be a flat, which is great. And you kind of live together and it's good. And then you kind of go up. But we kind of skipped that because we'd lived in a flat for a long time. And we bought a house. What I'm trying to say is you have to open your mind to a certain area. There might be an area you're completely set on, but it's worth having a look around at some areas that are perhaps not so loved. It's always worth sort of bypassing the estate agent where you can a little bit to find out if you're getting the full picture from the seller. They might not always like that, but sometimes it's worth doing. It's all about all the tips that Simon just said about the trade is off with gardens, with bedrooms, with whether you want it to be a flat. Fundamentally, one of the biggest reasons also we didn't go for the flat is that it was a downstairs flat, and I'd lived in flats many years with people above me, and I just thought, we didn't want any more of that. Oh. So it's all things to consider. And actually, I sometimes think when you hear someone's own personal house buying experience, it's kind of interesting to hear how it is. And I'll tell you, it's a stressful experience, but fundamentally, it's a worthwhile experience.
I think I am the only one here who hasn't gone through that process. And I have to say, it sort of fills me with a bit of dread, a huge amount of nervousness. Gazundering, gazumping, all these sorts of words that we're hearing, Simon, have you got any tips of the trade, as it were? Like Lee saying there that actually, if you speak to someone on a personal level, you find out what's going on behind the scenes with estate agents. And there are many wonderful estate agents. Don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying that there aren't. But there are a few things that you find out only when you've been through the painful process yourself. So what else is there, Simon?
Firstly, just to go back a step to the whole looking on Rightmove, Zoopla, etc. One of the things I would recommend is don't forget the estate agent. Don't forget the old-fashioned estate agent. If you're really looking for a property in an area, go wear out some leather on your shoes. Go to the estate agents, meet the estate agents. Make the estate agents realise that you are not just window shopping. You're not just someone who's gone out for a quick game of darts at the internet. You are serious about buying a property. And if you find the right property, you will pay a good price for it and you will buy it. Doesn't mean you'll overpay for it, but just say, right, I want a property. I want to buy here. This is why I want to buy here. This is my area. This is what I think is the fair price that I will pay for that property. This is how I back up that I can pay for it. I've got this much money as a deposit. I've got that much equity in my house. And I've got a mortgage agreement in principle. I am a good buyer. Sell yourself to the estate agent. Because then what will happen is when that estate agent gets properties coming in to them, before they go on the market even, or even when that estate agent goes around to value someone's house for them, the estate agent will be thinking, oh, hang on a minute, Georgie, now she's exactly the kind of person who might buy this property. If I can get this property on the books, she'd be very interested in this. And that's one of two things could go on. One, they might even say that to the person whose property they're valuing, going, I actually think I've got someone who would buy this property. Or more likely, what will happen is they'll get the property on the books, and that what will happen is before it goes on Rightmove or Zoopla or everything like that, they'll give you a call, say, we've got this property coming on. Do you want to come round and see it? We're going to show it to you first. It's that kind of relationship, which if you can build that there, is going to help you find the best property. It's going to help you make the best offer. Because then the question is, how much do you offer? Now, I would always argue, and it depends on the market, that's the taking the temperature thing. I would always argue to go in at least 10% below asking price and always go lower, because you can go lower and then you can go up. It's very difficult to go in higher and then go down. trust me, I tried this. It didn't work out. We didn't buy the property. We offered a price. It needed a lot of work. We thought about it. We weighed up the work. We were like, actually, we're going to need to spend more than that. Went back, downgraded the offer. The seller just decided they weren't interested and dropped us. I mean, fair play to them. You know, we were mugs. But go lower, because you can always go up. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to make a cheeky offer, because that property might be overpriced. It might be that that property is going to sit on the market for ages because nobody's going to buy it at that price. The way that you find the equilibrium is by people making offers, and offers either get rejected or they get accepted. For example, our flat that we live in now, we bought it for 12.5% below the asking price. And I basically said, this is what we can afford to pay. This is the offer, because he's an agent, are you interested? I said, yeah, but we can't afford it. It's too much. Would you make an offer? Don't think it's worth it. We're way off being able to afford it. Well, why don't you make an offer? So I said, okay, this is what we can afford to pay. That's our top whack. We can't go any higher. Came back. They can't sell it to you for that. They've got someone, you know, they had somewhere they want to find. They need more than that. I said, well, look, when I said that's all afford, that's all we can afford. I'm not playing a game here. But if they accept that, we will buy this flat. The estate agent went and negotiated money for them off the house that they'd found with the other estate agent, which was a probate sale. So it was four people involved in the probate sale. They all take a little bit less money each. They get their property sold to the people that we were buying off. So if you got that kind of relationship thing going on, it works out. And then, as Lee said, build a personal relationship with the people that you're buying from and convince them that you are a good buyer, that they should sell to you. But also what's super, super important is for the next step, because what you need to do is make sure that after your offer has been accepted, the whole thing doesn't just fall apart.
Right, exactly.
And that's where it gets expensive, because if you paid for a survey, if you've started paying solicitor's fees and things like that, and then all of a sudden it falls apart, you're going to end up maybe £1,000 or more out of pocket. And so to prevent yourself from being gazumped, which is where someone comes in with a higher offer after your offer has been accepted, the better the relationship you have directly with the seller, not with the estate agent in this instance, directly with the seller, the less likely they are to do the dirty on you. And also, if you're selling your home to someone, that means they're less likely to gazunder you, which is where someone comes in at the last moment and says, you know, that property we're going to buy off you for $250,000, actually, we're only going to buy it for $230,000. And if you don't accept it, we're walking away. Mm. And you're so invested in selling your property to them that you feel compelled to do so. So personal relationship there. And then the next step before you can get those keys in your hand and walk in that door and discover that they haven't quite cleaned it to your satisfaction is the paperwork element. It's the solicitor, it's the survey, it's getting the mortgage finalised, and that bit can be painful.
I was just going to offer some other tips, actually, Georgie, in the buying process and when you're hunting for a home, and some of the things that we also did. My future father-in-law, the house that we were buying, he visited every day for a week, at the weekend as well, at three various points of the day. Now, this is going very excessive, but it's a look at midday, it's a look at the evening, and it's a look at night.
Thumbs up from Simon, by the way.
To make sure that, you know, this area isn't noisy, or because you're making a very quick decision. You might look at a property for 10 minutes, want to buy that, you know, and it's a lot of money, and you're not really looking. You're just, oh, this house is nice. Look at that lovely carpet. You're not thinking about all of these other big things. Local schools might not be applicable to you, but it might be. You want to have a look at Ofsted reports, say how good a secondary school and a primary school is. Same for things like doctor surgeries. What's the rating of that nearby? Have you got more than one option? How close are you to things like hospitals? How good is the hospital? You know, other things that you might want to factor in. You commute, you know, how far is the train or tube or bus, or how are you going to get to your workplace? How frequent, how good is that public transport system? And also another thing I did, I looked at crime maps. Now, that might not be your thing, but I did actually have a look around. You type in a postcode, go on the police.uk website, you can look at how many burglaries have been in a certain month, how many car thefts, how many. And I know this sounds all a little bit, you know,
it
seems a little bit anal, but at the same time, it gives you a peace of mind that you're buying into an area that you're going to want to live in for a long time and not get the keys, get in, which, by the way, is one of the best feelings in the world when you get in, get through that door and have all these grand visions of what you're going to do with the place. But then to realise a couple of nights in, you've got someone antisocial living nearby, or you've got some other problems that you hadn't really factored in, and you might be stuck. You don't want to be relisting a property very quickly because it quite obviously shows that there's been a problem of where you're living. So you want to make sure that you've done all of that groundwork and homework before you go and, you know, plunge into what is going to be probably the biggest purchase of your life.
So lots of tips there, but where can we go for more information, Simon?
Get yourself onto This Is Money. Go to thisismoney.co.uk/mortgages. You will find our mortgages and home section there, which is full of articles about the property market, articles about getting a mortgage, and also, all importantly, all of our guides. And the last thing I would say is you can enlist a professional if you're spending a lot of money, one of these buying agents that we talked about before. But for most people, they won't do that, okay? It's worth considering, but for most people, they won't do that. But if you want to beat the property market, so to speak, all you need to do is make yourself considerably above the average buyer. And the sheer lack of research and thought that many people put into when buying a home is surprising considering how much they cost. So if you just put in the legwork for that couple of £100,000 purchase, you will stand a considerably better chance of getting yourself ahead of the game rather than the behind the game.
Well, I don't know about anyone else. I'm feeling quite motivated now, honestly. So thank you very much. For lots more how-to guides and to stay up to date, of course, with all the latest breaking money news, just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This Is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, creating millions of reasons to celebrate every month.